Welcome to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the church in the world. And thank you for joining us on Just Love. It is, again, a continuing to be strange time when we gather. We are still in the midst of the corona pandemic. And if you look in different places, there's different surges in different places, and sometimes numbers are very different, but in proportion to where they are, they can be pretty significant. Those of us in the New York area, we, thanks be to God, seem to be on a very, very significant downtrend, and we've reached a pretty low point of new cases, deaths, etc., and all that. Really, really wonderful. And I think the fear that a lot of people, well, the joy that people have is that we're over the worst of it. The anxiety and the fear that people have is that we know that this kind of spreads in a variety of ways, and that the potential, as we get closer together to each other, even as we try to exercise caution in social distancing and masks, etc., that maybe we get a little bit of a resurge or a lot of a resurge, which would not be good at all. So there is a little bit of anxiety with regard to that, even as things are opening up to a certain extent. Now, I can tell you, I live in Midtown Manhattan near Grand Central Station, and I walk around here, and yeah, there is a little bit more activity, but it's not a lot more activity, and maybe it depends when you walk, when you do that. The other night, the first night of reopening, I walked up to Grand Central Terminal, the major terminal in New York, kind of in the height of what would be the rush hour, and it was really very, very empty. And I saw on the floor there, there were the social distancing markers, but there really weren't many people there to be socially distant from. So we'll see. And then the other issue that we deal with, that we are dealing with and continuing, the aftermath of the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis by that police officer, in a very, very disturbing, disturbing reality, disturbing fact. And what it uncovered is a lot of disturbing facts and some issues which are far beyond one individual, but they go all across society when it comes to race, when it comes to inequality and opportunity. And those things have brought about a lot of protests, the overwhelming majority of those being very, very peaceful, very well-intentioned. But in the midst of that, were some agitators. In the midst of it was some looting and violence that is completely unacceptable and needs to be also denounced as the brutal kind of killing of George Floyd needs to be denounced also. So that's the world that we live in right now. That's what we're dealing with as kind of summer approaches. Fanny, in New Jersey, you kind of are opening up a little bit more, aren't you?
Yeah, so the nail salons are open. Beauty stuff is open. The parks are open, although I went to the park yesterday and the basketball courts and the tennis courts were still locked. The mayor did sign the executive order for stay at home, so they're canceling the stay at home. Everyone can go out, but of course, still social distance and still wearing a mask.
Okay, so you've been going out a little bit more?
Yeah, a little bit is actually a very accurate word, because what I do is, if my parents wait for me, they usually go walking in the morning, but if they wait for me after work, then I go, we walk for like maybe 3 miles together. around the neighborhood after work around 6 o'clock when the sun isn't burning. But the parks are packed. What we do is we have a park really close to us. So we walk outside the neighborhood, go into the park, and come back into the neighborhood. The park is very crowded. Some wear masks, some don't wear masks. So we just have to be careful.
Okay. You've noticed a fair amount of more people.
Yeah, inside the neighborhood where we live, not so much, because like I've mentioned before, unless you live here, no one comes here, because there's really no way out. It's just into the neighborhood, outside of the neighborhood. But in the park is pretty big, and when we first started walking into the park, it wasn't as crowded, but now that the weather's getting nicer, and now the order has been lifted, it's getting crowded.
Okay. Tom, what's the report from your neck of the woods, midtown Manhattan?
It's, Monsignor, it's kind of like Fanny said, I guess more and more people, you're seeing people kind of walking around, I did actually manage to go to the local establishment, the local bar, and I did actually was able to purchase a beer. I kept my social distance. I was with a friend. We walked outside. Okay. So I'm noticing more and more people are venturing out. Like Fanny said, the majority are still wearing masks. I have to say that. I'm noticing a little more freedom of movement with people. I think there's a sense that, we're not in the dire, dire straits we were maybe a month ago. And right. I think that there's a little bit of jubilation with that. So I notice a little bit more freedom.
I was up just earlier. I was early this week. I was up in your neck of the woods, and I think you're right. Now, for listeners throughout the country, the Midtown area is the area that a lot of you see on movies and things like that. You see Times Square. You see skyscrapers. You see Grand Central Station. And that's the church where I live in, is in that area. And also, more or less in the same area, is our Central Catholic Charities offices. So earlier this week, I had to go up and pick up some stuff that was going to be part of the kind of COVID emergency response programs that we're doing, picking up some gift cards that are going to go to some people who have really been impacted, lost their jobs, and need some help. So I'm going up to parts of the Hudson Valley. And so I had to go up and pick up those cards. And what I noticed, the one thing I noticed, was that there are a lot more kind of construction repair trucks around. Interestingly, maybe it's a sign of the weather. There was one block where I saw, five or six air conditioning companies with their vans were there, because I guess as it gets warmer, people want to make sure their air conditioning is working. So anyway, having spoken about that, let's go to our first guest. Our first guest is Todd Collin, who is the Assistant Executive Director of Clinical Services at Aster Services. Dr. Collin, thank you so much for joining us on Just Love.
Thank you for having me, Monsignor. I appreciate it.
Great. So, Dr. Collin, just give our listeners a little bit of your background. How did you get into the field of counseling, psychology? How'd you get there?
Thanks for asking. I actually knew that I really was interested in doing something in mental health, but initially I didn't have a mission. And early in my career before, when I was just done with my bachelor's degree, I was lucky enough to take a position in a foster care agency that was very committed to doing family and systems work. And it really showed me what could be accomplished by working with not only, traditional family members, but extended family members, grandparents, foster parents, other systems, schools, community, religious organizations. And I saw that really when you're working with the entire system, it's not the the traditional therapy model that makes a difference. It's when you can bring everyone together to serve a child and a family. And so that kind of put me on the mission.
So Todd, where did you grow up? Which part of the world?
Grew up in the city, grew up in Brooklyn, and then out on the island a little bit, but went to school in Manhattan, and then was committed to, I've been at Astor ever since I graduated with my master's and doctorate in clinical child psychology, and I've been with Astor for over 17 years.
Okay, so we're speaking with Dr. Todd Collin, who is the Associate Executive Director at Astor for Clinical Services. So Todd, one of the things we've been kind of trying to focus on in Just Love is that so much of what's going on in the field you talk about, child welfare, counseling, has always been, to use a phrase, up close and personal. You know, you were really very close to the people. But for the past 2.5 months or so, that's all been upended since we've been on kind of the social distancing thing. But the world hasn't ended in terms of services. So tell us a little bit about how you've transitioned and how Astor has transitioned.
Yeah, it was a sort of a transition that was going in bits and pieces beforehand. We had dipped our toe in that water going back to 2016 when we had done some telepsychiatry, which was remote psychiatric services, which we were able to connect, families who were able to come to our satellites, school satellites, and still get seen by, a medical provider at one of our hub clinic locations. So we had a little bit of a feel for that, and we knew that could be successful, and that was a model that worked. We had begun to expand that in little tiny pieces, again, by providing that telehealth, telepsychiatry, from clinic to clinic psychiatric services. But then all of a sudden, when COVID happened in March, it was a sudden and rapid transition where we basically literally hundreds of staff that were used to providing on-site services and clinics, day treatment, other therapeutic milieus and more intensive clinical programs all of a sudden had to go remote almost overnight. It was daunting, it was challenging, but it was also more successful than we dreamed. We found that within 1 week, we were seeing as many families remotely as we had within our traditional week of seeing them in our clinics. And actually within 2 weeks, we were seeing more families every week and having more sessions through telehealth than we were in our traditional settings. And I think there were a lot of reasons for that. Certainly the fact that we have, the world was in crisis and families needed that connection and they needed that continuity of service and that connection. And also all the levels of flexibility that telehealth provides, whether it be phone contact, different video platforms, any way we were able to reach someone, we were basically allowed to, and we took advantage of that. As well as taking in new clients as well.
So Todd, let me interrupt you for just a moment. And I heard everything you're saying. And great, sounds really, really good. Just walk me back a little bit, because even at Astor, I remember a conversation maybe 10 or 15 years ago when people were talking about teletherapy and psychotherapy. And I remember some of the clinicians and some of the senior people at Astor kind of denouncing it, basically saying, oh no, we could never do that because that would be a watered down version of counseling. You're old enough to probably have heard some of those opinions. Mm-hmm. Are you not?
I am.
So what changed?
A couple of things changed. I think that there were also some trials there was more information out there, certainly because in rural communities and other states, telehealth had already been piloted. And what I think we saw both in working with, there was a lot of the work was done with veterans and adults and also families that were having trouble accessing care. And they looked at models of using some of the same kinds of cognitive behavioral evidence-based treatments that we already do. And what they said was, it's not exactly the same, certainly as doing a session when you're in the room. There are differences and there are challenges, but research has shown that it can be as effective and that it is meaningful. And that when you, and then certainly even when we think of like a post-COVID environment, hopefully we'll get to one day when we have choices about how we provide services, it doesn't mean that it's going to be every, you know, telehealth is necessarily going to be the right fit for every family. And we'll be able to make decisions around that. But I think we've seen that telehealth also, what it limits and what it can limit in some areas, it also actually can enrich services in others. We have access to families in their homes in ways that we never had before. We're doing more family therapy and engaging with families in meaningful ways where we never have before. We have kids who parents would bring into us, bring into our clinics and say, you know, we're having these issues at home because of tantrums and other behaviors and things like that, that we were just not seeing in the clinic setting. But guess what? Now, when we're seeing them at home, at dinner time, at play time, at transitions, doing other things, we're seeing all those behaviors and we can work with the families in the moment, providing those interventions in vivo.
Dr. Todd Collin, who is the Associate Director at Aster of Clinical Services. And we're talking about some of the changes in the way that therapy is done, actually brought on by necessity, but talking about some of the advantages of those. You know, and it seems to me a lot of sense. Are there any downsides that you're seeing that we need to make sure we compensate for as we take advantage of the upside?
You have to know, again, it's about fit, and we know that some people are more savvy with the technology than others. Also, we know that some of our families may not have access to the technology. And I think that a lot of the infrastructure supports and things that they're talking about and the way some of the stimulus money and other money gets spent to support Wi-Fi and other networks and data and making sure that families who need to have the technology support so that they can benefit and aren't left out of this opportunity, that's going to be key because we're not returning to business as normal anytime soon. We also know that it's a better fit for some families than others. We know that sometimes young kids with attention spans and other things at young ages, you got to bring other things to the plate when you're there and you're in the teletherapy session. You got to be ready to bring other activities to keep the kids engaged. So there are some different challenges, but I think we're getting better at understanding them and tailoring our interventions to kind of matching and how to provide that best fit with different families and what they're asking for. I know that a lot of our families, we've surveyed over 1,000 of our families about how they feel about telehealth and what their preferences are once the restriction levels are lifted and we can resume some level of in-person services. And more than half of them have said that they would like either strictly or some combination of telehealth services in line with in-person services, even when they are able to come back into our services and into our sites.
So, Todd, I know you mentioned that you began kind of in with child welfare, you mm-hmm. in that area. There was an article in earlier this week talking about how reports of abuse are significantly down, but it may not mean that the abuse is down. And some of the limitations of working remotely in some of those areas. Do you have any thoughts about that?
I think there are concerns about a lot of different things that may be masked or not seen. I think child abuse, domestic violence, we're worried about suicidality. Some of those numbers aren't as high as we might expect, especially for a population in crisis. I know that the clinical teams are talking that as people are beginning to move out a little bit out and maybe the supervision levels and are not quite as high, we've seen a recent upswing in some of our crisis programs and some of those crisis behaviors from kids and adolescents. And it may be just that it, and that sometimes happens in the warm weather as we get to the summer and we get to the natural end of the school year as well. So all these different transitions that people are having now in this COVID environment are all risk factors and have to be monitored very carefully. I think that this is why outreach and screening is going to be so important moving forward, so that we're constantly checking in with our kids and our families and our adults on the parenting stress and where they're at, which sets the stage for some of those abusive situations. Because if parents aren't able to take care of themselves and aren't able to handle their stressors, they're going to be more stressed out with their kids, and that creates dangerous situations all around. So there's a lot of outreach and engagement that has to continue to happen.
So, Dr. Collin, let me shift a little bit. You mentioned that you kind of got into this and you were very intrigued by systems work, which I think looks at the whole looks at the whole systems that interact with a family or an individual. You know, quite frankly, in the past few weeks, the issues of societal systems, racism, inequality, police, community, all of those things are just really, really at the fore. So let me ask you, in the clinical area, how does clinical work play itself out when you have differences of race, ethnicity between the clinician and those who are being served? I mean, most of the people whom Catholic Charities and ASTA serves are people of color. How do those ethnic racial systems play themselves out in a therapeutic environment?
That's a great question. And I think most important of all is that it has to be brought up. And it's the clinician and the provider's responsibility to bring it up, that they may have a different social reality, that they, you know, that they can't necessarily understand everything that a family or a person of color may be going through, but that there has to be a willingness to try to understand, and that it's that these are important conversations that if a family wants to bring up, that the therapeutic relationship and that provider relationship is a place where it's a safe place to bring up those conversations. And some people may choose to walk through that door and some people may not, but if a clinician doesn't make it okay to have that conversation and recognize that, then that's going to be something that's going to go underground, and then it's not going to be said, and then something incredibly meaningful is going to be lost. So in a clinical setting, when you open the door and say, look, all of this is going around in the world and everything, and if I'm a white clinician, or if I'm female, or if there's different races, whether it be race, orientation, no matter what the differences are, those just have to be recognized and discussed. And you know, you may not be able to put yourself in someone else's position, but you have to let them know that you want to understand and you want to have that conversation.
And does that involve at least making sure there's an additional amount of training for clinicians so that the clinician herself or himself might be comfortable introducing that topic?
Tremendously. And one thing that, you know, and one of the, with so much of going on, the only, you know, an unfortunate benefit of all this, of course, is that there are a lot of resources right there. But we also know that resources alone and training alone, without continuing conversations and without a continuing institutional commitment, which ASTA has into addressing these kinds of inequalities and making sure that it's part of our ongoing conversations, not just in a moment of crisis, but all the time, is really what's going to make the difference. So it's about both. And that's what we're trying to do to support, honestly, our clinicians, not only with having those conversations with families, but you know, and on their clients, but also with their own families as human beings. Everyone's struggling with the situation right now, just as human beings, and we're trying to all address that. Because if we don't know how to address that with our own family, then beginning to address it, you know, with children and families in need, it's just another level of stress and difficulty.
Okay, so Doug, let me just. Thank you for the generosity of your time. But I would like to give you the opportunity before we kind of conclude our conversation. Is there kind of an overarching, or I know you've talked about a lot of it, points or things that are interesting that we've learned in this COVID environment that are going to help us going forward? And are there some, you know, maybe systemic things, since we talked about it, that you'd like to see different in the area of providing mental health clinical services to people who need them?
I think it's been a lesson in resilience, certainly from our families, and also just from the clinicians and the staff themselves. Some of the work has been remote, but I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that we have staff who are in our residence and in our prevention programs who are still providing those live services. I think it's that hope and resilience will triumph in these situations, because we found a way, and that if the regulations allow, which they have, and we hope that they will continue to allow us to provide services in any way that's meaningful and possible, that there is value from them, and that value has been recognized by our staff, and that the value has been recognized by the kids and the families we work with. Moving forward in those systems, I think that we just know that we can't put the genie back in the bottle. We can't go back to business as usual. There's going to be a new normal and a new balance, which is going to allow us to provide support not only for the next 12 to 18 to 24 months while we're still dealing with this pandemic, but we know that we can access families now and provide services in a flexible way that's in some ways more meaningful than we had before. And we have to continue to look to advocate to make sure that that's what continues.
Todd, let me just share with you an anecdote that I think confirms what we're saying about, boy, this technology and the ability to do some of those things in a person's own home might actually increase attendance, consistency. So let me tell you a little anecdote. This goes back probably 10 years or so. And some very well-intentioned person came to me with an idea that they wanted to tutor kids in foster care. And this person had put together a group of people, and like I said, very, very well-intentioned. And they could do the tutoring on Tuesdays and Thursdays between 3 and 5, any place in Midtown Manhattan. Well, when we had the conversation that the children they wanted to tutor were living in the Bronx and Brooklyn and all of those places, and the foster parents had 5 other things that they were doing, for them to bring kids from the Bronx for an hour tutoring, it just didn't work. But like I said, with the best of intention, but this person, all this person thought about was, the kids aren't doing that good well in school, and with tutoring, they'll do better in school. And so, you know, I think what you're saying is maybe in the midst of this awful pandemic, we might be able to figure out a little bit better how we can meet the genuine needs of people, taking into consideration all of the systems environment that a lot of families are dealing with.
Absolutely. Because, you know, while parents are trying to provide remote learning, educational support, working from home, doing a million things, in order to meet them where they're at and try to just match the services we provide in a way that kind of takes into all their account, all their stress, all the different people they're trying to stay in contact with and manage. And we can kind of consolidate it using this technology and make the interventions more meaningful. That's really the best of both worlds. And that's kind of the golden thread that we've been trying to get to.
Okay. Dr. Todd Collin, thanks for taking the time to be with us on Jokes Love. And thanks for illuminating me and our audience about that. You know what, if you have any of those articles that are, or the research that maybe might not be completely PhD academic level, if you send them in to us, we'll post them on our on our website about this article so people can learn a little bit more about the effectiveness of what's going on.
Will do. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Dr. Todd Collin, Assistant Executive Director of Clinical Services at ASTA Services for Children and Families. So, I think there's a lot we've learned about the ability to do things remotely, not clinical work, but we're able to, without going into the serious studios, we're able to do our weekly show here. And so there's a lot that I think we're learning in this. So, Fanny, why don't we take a break? And when we'll come back, we'll go to our next guest, Just Love. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. Join us when we come back in just a minute on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the church in the world. And we talk about those things that are on the agenda of everybody, but we look at it from our perspective of Catholic values, Catholic beliefs. And as we oftentimes talk about, what's critical to us and fundamental is the dignity of each person as made in the image and likeness of God. We do have a particular kind of bias for the needs of those who are the poorest, the most vulnerable. We care about workers and their rights and the dignity of work. We care about family participation in community. And we care about the environment and taking care of God's creation. So those are the fundamental values that are part of what we believe, and we look at what's going on in the world through those values. And you know, one of the things that can be a little bit frustrating at times is that while it's clear to say that we believe in the dignity of work, the rights of workers, we believe in taking care of the environment, how do you get from those clearly kind of understood values and principles down to whether a particular policy is the best policy? Is it really going to work in the way that people want it to work? And how much of it should you be doing? And what are the trade-offs that's there? And that's kind of what we talk about. We talk about social justice, because social justice deals with a lot of competing rights and a lot of competing responsibilities, and how that all gets worked out is really not very simple. But we can't throw our hands up and say we have nothing to say because we don't have all of the detailed answers. So having said that, we look at what's going on in the world through that prism of Catholic values, of Catholic beliefs. And so right now, one of the issues that we're dealing with is we're dealing with the issues of police and communities. We're dealing with the aftermath of the killing of George Floyd. And we're dealing with that in so many different ways. And so today, I am really, really pleased that one of our guests is, Danielle Beckford, who is with DAB Entertainment. She herself is a member of St. Charles Borromeo Parish in Harlem in New York City. And so we're delighted that she is joining us. Danielle Beckford, thank you for taking the time to be with us on Just Love.
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you so much. I really am enjoying your radio show.
Well, and it's going to be even better because you're our guest. So Danielle, this is really a troubling time.
Yeah.
There's a lot of bad stuff going on and a lot of stuff that's been built up for years and things that we've ignored and all of that. So what are you doing these days? I know you're participating in a number of conversations. Give us a little bit of what's going on from your perspective.
Well, from my perspective, you know, the entertainment world has, at least my entertainment perspective, the entertainment world has kind of, they're always on top of the issues, and we're always very reactionary to what's going on in the political social sphere. And it really is just echoing the voices of what our protesters are saying, what our leadership is saying, that this is a time, you know, no longer is it time for us to just accept the status quo. We got to affect change, you know, today. That we keep pushing it off and saying, oh yeah, we're gonna make this change. Oh yes, we're gonna have changes to our police forces and have them wear cameras on them so that we can, you know, track these changes. But that doesn't seem to be changing the policy of the police force. It doesn't seem to be changing the policies that we're seeing that are in place. And, you know, where I stand with it, and where I think most of the other young adults that I interact with, that I talk with, is we stand in solidarity that this has to stop. You know, we are Americans first. And if America says that we are all equal under the law, we need to actually use that in practice. And the only way we can do that is to use our First Amendment rights and our rights to protest and our rights to stand up for what we believe in. And we have to be vocal about it. We have to be vocal about it at the polls. We have to be vocal about it to make sure we have enough representatives and in elected official offices. So we really, the conversation is widespread. Most of the companies I've worked with and have dealt with have taken, you know, that day off on last Tuesday, and Blackout Tuesday, everyone participated, and there was a lot of support and a lot of standing in solidarity, but it doesn't stop there and it can't stop there. So that's what I've been seeing on my side.
Mm-hmm. So let me, Danielle, go to one of the aspects that everybody talks about. I mean, there's issues of legal rights and civil rights, and there's issue of economic rights and economic issues. And one of the things that kind of was talked about is that in the federal stimulus bill, that a lot of big corporations kind of benefited from it and got billions of dollars, but some of the small businesses didn't benefit as much as others. Now, so I'm speaking to you is because now you are a Black woman entrepreneur because you have your own business, right?
That's correct.
So how are you impacted by the economic downturn? How are you struggling or thriving? Because a lot of businesses are thriving, like Amazon.
But that was true.
So talk to it from that perspective of a Black woman entrepreneur.
From the Black entrepreneur perspective, it has, my particular business has taken a unique hit, and that's predominantly because of the services I'm in. Entertainment is not a necessity like Amazon with Whole Foods, you know, that's where we're seeing the growth on Amazon is their Whole Foods home delivery business is going bananas, right? I am a sole proprietor where it's literally just me. I run everything. I'm my assistant, my accountant, my everything in the grand scheme of things. And, you know, I'm a startup, which is my startup of Dab Entertainment started in late 2019. So I really got hit with
I wouldn't want you in charge of the timing of when I do things.
Right. Like that timing, but you know, but in the same respect, it has given me this coronavirus and the shutdown has given me an opportunity to really reassess the landscape of what I was doing and what my business is all about. How can I be more impactful in what and how I can contribute as a consultant, as a brand representative? How do we redefine brands? I work with a couple of artists and all of them are sitting at home like, I mean, what do I do now? All of my money comes from touring. What happens now, right? So it's really going back to the drawing board to try and monetize where they weren't monetizing before, you know, finding those holes in their overall strategy and capitalizing off of that. So for my business, it's been a struggle because it's kind of uncharted territory. There is no rule book. Everything is kind of, you know, Zoom this and Zoom that now. But in the same respect, it's allowing for us to be more creative. And that's why I went into the creative field of entertainment, you know, to not be pigeonholed by a box, as they say. So,
You know, Danielle, one of the things, though, I've noticed, okay, is in the entertainment and in the media business, how quickly things pivot.
Yep.
So, and again, whatever advertisement I've seen, whether big corporate, every single now, the advertisement includes something COVID related.
Absolutely.
You know, and quite frankly, not yet have I seen it in mainstream where the advertisement has shifted to dealing with the reverberations of the George Floyd killing. Although I've seen some of it. I won't mention the name of the bank, but it was just preposterous. One of the ads they put, I mean, this bank wouldn't know, I mean, but it was just kind of, they felt the need to do it. And in the entertainment industry, you know, haven't there been like 5, 6, 7 major quote unquote specials in which you had artists from home participating in a variety of stuff. So it, as you say, there's a lot going on, but it's a little bit chaotic.
They're doing the best to kind of capture, and this is where I guess from the media standpoint, we're capturing things in as real time as we possibly can. But we also are huge proponents of fact, right? We want to make sure that we are as close. That's why you have people who check to make sure that is this aligned with what everyone else is saying, or maybe they pull back a statement here and there, because it's all about fact. And if we can't share the facts of this hour, of this moment, of this, you know, protest and revolution of sorts, then we won't necessarily be able to reflect on this time period with truth. So facts equal truth, and truth is being portrayed in our media, in our entertainment, so that we can inform, and not just inform, hopefully pull on the heartstrings of each other and make sure that everyone is, you know, it working together. The same thing goes with COVID-19, right? You see all these protesters out there. Most of the footage I've seen have people with masks on, because it's still very key to what's going on right now. It's a storm, and a storm has brewed. And now we've come to that tipping point that we just can't sit back in our homes. We have to get out there and stand for something. Otherwise, we'll fall for anything.
We're speaking with the CEO of DAB Entertainment, Danielle Beckford. Danielle, you're participating, I think, in a conversation this weekend sponsored by the Archdiocesan Office of Black Ministry. Yep. Talk to us about that conversation.
So that conversation is actually another conversation. Since the onset of COVID-19, our churches have been in a position of trying to reinvent and it's hard to reinvent church. It is what it is, but we are now in a position of really reconnecting. I would say, if you're in quarantine, if you're at home, if you're traveling, and you can't make it to your home parish, how do we now pivot what we are used to having, which is a one central location? You go, you know everybody's name. How do we still maintain community in that forum and get people to come to church? And the reality is that we may not ever return fully to just people going to their own congregations in their home communities. We are actually looking at the future is looking like we will end up having more of an online world presence instead of a small community presence, which is kind of apropos when you think about it, being that the church is the last one to adopt the world presence when the World Wide Web has been around for over 20 years.
Hey, so Danielle, let me interrupt you for a little anecdote. Because sure. Just earlier today, I got a letter from a 90-year-old woman who asked me if she could fulfill her obligation in the future going to Mass by watching it live stream. So the world is changing not merely for millennials and age, but it's changing for everybody.
Everyone. And we can't discount the fact that that 90-year-old woman is incapable of watching live stream, because that sometimes happens too. We have these preconceived notions in our communities that our elderly are not as, you know, hip with the day or hip with the technology. That's just not the case. I mean, I've got grandma, you know, some of my grandma friends have their cell phones, and they can manipulate some of these applications that come out better than I can, partially because they have the time. And the other part is because they are trying to stay relevant. And how does the church stay relevant? You got to get with the times. And segueing into what I do with my parish at St. Charles Borromeo is we have a new media ministry. And that's all we've been talking about for the last 7 years is how does our church stay relevant with the times, communicate our message of love, our message of being Catholic, and ultimately our message of being strong Black Catholics and the community of strong Black Catholics. How do we share this experience with the world? And we do it through marketing, obviously, but we also have to do it by getting our boots on the streets and going out and protesting, getting our footage right for when we broadcast Mass on our website every week, and, you know, maintaining that connection, that community. And it's the one thing that's been missing in COVID-19 is the outpouring of appreciation that we've received from even having our experience online has been, you know, phenomenal. And as I look at the metrics on how many times each video was viewed, you're like, wow, I know we had 700 people at Mass every week, but can you imagine 700 people watching, not just from our community? There's an additional 300 or 400 out there that we didn't even know we would touch. And we would
so let me give you another number. I'm told on a typical Sunday at St. Patrick's Cathedral, you know, the main Mass, they may get 3,000 people at the main Mass. Right. But I'm told that since they've begun live streaming that Mass, they now get over 50,000 people.
That's right.
You know, so it's going. Hey, Danielle, go back to work. You got to make your business work. We want you to succeed.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Hey, so Danielle Beckford, CEO of DAB Entertainment, parishioner of St. Charles, and a panelist on a conversation about what's going on in this current world. Danielle, thanks so much for joining us on Just Love.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Thank you. Let's take a break. This is Just Love. Just do it. Love God, your neighbor, yourself, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. The Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. This is our weekly conversation about what's going on in the world. You know, I'm sad to kind of tell you, but I'm happy in another sense that Fanny was gracious enough to kind of join us for the past 2 years on Just Love. However, this is going to be her last show with us because she's going to continue to focus even more on some of the social media things that have become even more prevalent. So we're grateful that she took on this additional work for 2 years. And Fanny, would you tell our listeners, what changes have you noticed as a result of the COVID-19 situation in the social media world that you're going to be spending even more time focusing on?
Well, because of COVID, everyone seems to be more engaged on social media than before. There were pockets within the frame of a day where people were more engaged. For example, Mondays at 3 p.m. was a big pocket where people were more engaged. But now there are more and more pockets within a day where people are on, because people are home all day. And although they're working, they may check their cell phone for 10 minutes and go through a news feed just to see what's going on. There's also, you know, the protests are a big deal now. So people are are online a lot more now than before. So it makes my job a little easier because people engage more, but then at the same time, I have to be more engaged and feed our followers a lot more news and a lot more information, especially about our food pantries. People are always interested in our food pantries now because of COVID, anything with education and children. So the more I post, the better. But I do have to find things to post that don't get stale or boring. But people are very much engaged on their phones, on their laptops, wherever it is that, you know, they have a screen.
Okay. So Fanny, thank you for being with us on Just Love. And I know you're not going away because you're going to do our social media stuff. Yeah. And that's why one of the things why I think, you know, if we can get from Todd a link to some of the information on the effectiveness of telecounseling, that would probably be an engaging thing for some of our social media posts. So listen, listeners, this is a troubling time. Things in New York are getting better with regard to COVID, but I see that there are spikes in scores of other states throughout the country. So let's keep that in our prayers, and let's keep the social unrest. Let's keep the issues of inequality, of racism, lack of opportunity, and the need for reconciliation, for greater respect, greater engagement. Let's keep those on our prayer. So thank you for being with us on Just Love. Just do it. Love God, love your neighbor, love yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. This is the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.